Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Main Street Universe.
That the old man sings, and I listen to every word. He was singing something about yesterday, and I wish that they could have heard. Up past the river where the eagle flies, but she has nowhere else she can go. A look of determination in her eyes, for she's guarding the valley below.
That was your host, Daniel Michael. I'm Kevin Baird, and this is Main Street Universe. I want to thank you guys for being here. It's a wet day in February, the last day of the month.
Yes, it's actually, I believe, one of the few days that we've had here that wasn't an amazingly lovely, gorgeous day when we've done the show. And hello, everybody, and welcome to Main Street Universe. This is the show reminding you that the mysteries and possibilities of the universe are closer to Main Street than you may have ever imagined. And I will start off by welcoming my co-host, high atop from the mountain where the Temple of Gaia sits, Mr. Kevin Baird.
Thank you, and happy spring. It's been one long month of October. It's been 90 days long, roughly, because we've not really seen December or January.
Not really. A little bit. Bits and pieces here. It was really cold just the other day, but today's just a little rainy. And Kevin Baird, for information, is a psychic medium, intuitive consultant. You can be reached at www.templeofgaia.com, as well as the stores Crystalis in Herndon and Sticks and Stones in Fairfax. I'd also like to plug a store whose proprietor, whose owner, whose starter was Lily, who's going to be our guest next week, March the 7th, here on Main Street Universe, Esoterica, Esoterica. Right now it is online only, www.esotericanova.com. You can reach it at 703-777-4642. Still your New Age, interfaith focus, herbs, crystals, stones, oils, candles, incense, divination tools, and more. That's esotericanova.com. And I do believe that...
Sticks and Stones, right? And
I did mention those, yeah. Yes. Sticks and Stones, where Kevin does do readings, as well as Crystalis in Herndon.
Sticks and Stones is good for your herbs, right? And Professor Bubbles is there. You can contact her for... the herb stuff.
Yes. And she's very schooled, very skilled.
And grows her own sages and all that other stuff that's out there. Pennyroyal, I believe.
She shared with me once that she can grow saffron around here. And that's very odd because, I mean, I believe her. I'm just saying it's a very difficult to grow, I heard. I'm not a herbalist myself, but I've heard it's very difficult to grow, but she claims to do it. She's an amazing person with herbs and gardening and growing things, and she sells them in her store. I have some of her mugs, actually.
I bet she can even stick a 2x4 in the ground and get it to sprout.
You know, I think I remember once in old, we're going to do an episode on love spells sometime in the future.
Sure.
I actually think I remember one about a potato that you put into the window and how it sprouts out and something about, I read that in an old book somewhere years ago. It's something how they reach out and it's supposed to come back or something like that. But let's move on with our show today. I believe our Eye in the Sky, our Sky Watcher, Brett Roone-Hillman, is here. Are you there, Brett?
I'm here physically.
Okay, physically you are here.
I am back from a convention, and I have that post-convention funk at the moment. But I think I am still clear enough to see what's going on in the stars today.
Okay, good, good. And you'll be doing our Eye in the Sky segment. How was the festival, by the way, before we get started?
Oh, it was amazing. I'm already planning to go next year. And I must be a glutton for punishment because I'm planning on filling in forms to teach.
Oh, my God.
I got to meet one of our hopefully future guests, Selena Fox. And she is as amazing in person as she is on the radio, on another show that I am a part of. And just everything that was, I didn't know what to expect, but everything just ended up being better than everything else. So it just could not finish too soon. I wanted it to last another week.
It's always nice.
But eventually we had to go home. So,
what, again, was the theme of the festival? I always forget.
The theme this year? The theme for Convocation is they go through the tarot cards each year, and this year we got to the moon, so next year will be the sun.
Wow, okay. So we will be on now. I'm glad you had a good week. I had a vacation like that last week. And if anybody wants to call in, by the way, our call-in number is 760-542-4345. And now we will get on to our topic today, which is alternative energy sources. And
yes, what alternative energy do you have, opposed to, like, the gas that's out there? And
yes, for running.
Caffeine.
All different things. We'll discuss all different aspects of it. At first, sort of power plant aspects, and then sort of move on from there. Start off with Brazil. Since the early 90s, many of the citizens of Brazil have been fighting the building of the Belo Monte Dam. This dam will flood 500 square kilometers of land, as well as displace 40,000 indigenous people. This dam will block off the Xinju River, if I'm saying that right. It is said that if the dam is built, it will cause the fish to die, making food scarce, and could lead to the spread of disease. Indigenous people have begun to protest the building of this giant dam. Boats full of indigenous people have begun to arrive at the proposed site to establish a permanent village to block the construction of this dam. Even big-time movie maker James Cameron of Avatar fame and some other films has gotten involved. Mr. Cameron says he has adopted the anti-dam campaign as a personal crusade. And for a minute, it appeared that the momentum was swaying in the direction of the anti-dam movement. A federal court judge, Antonio Carlos de Almeida Campello, suspended the preliminary license for the dam, saying that the project presented a danger of irreparable harm. However, the ruling has been overturned by a regional appellate court, and bidding has been allowed to move forward. Brazil plans to build 100 more large dams in the Amazon rainforest over the next 20 years. The fear of this being that the rivers of the Amazon will be destroyed and its life drained away, becoming instead a series of reservoirs and giant walls of steel and concrete. So, what is this all about? It's about energy. It's about power. The dams mentioned are to create hydroelectric power stations. This brings me to today's topic. Today we'll explore other and hopefully less destructive ways to achieve the goal of bringing electricity to the masses, as well as to small groups and individuals. We will start with solar. There have been many innovations in solar or photovoltaic cells. The cost of solar cells has come down 50% in the last 15 years. The silicon cluster tool can stack materials thinner than a human hair. This allows for affordable, everyday practical solar cells and produced in mass quantities. These paper-thin solar cells are used by the military to recharge batteries in Iraq and Afghanistan. The company called Cool Earth has released an inflatable solar cell collector. This light inflatable collector is 400 times cheaper than the polished aluminum ones. And it's about 2 meters or roughly 6 to 7 feet wide. Its functional energy generation cost is 18 cents per watt, 500 watts per balloon. They're like big inflatable solar balloons. Energy Innovations, another company known as Energy Innovations, came up with a clever idea of using mirrors to focus and concentrate the sun's energy back into solar cells. Since the sun moves, a stationary mirror will not do. Instead, the innovators at Energy Innovations devised a mirror table with multiple moving mirrors. It's called a heliostat. It is comprised of 16 sticks. Each stick on this heliostat holds 53 mirrors. The device as a whole is known as the sunflower. This device is best used on commercial rooftops. Now we'll take this to the South Pacific. A group known as the International Union for the Conservation of Nature, IUCN, has looked into providing solar power and has helped provide solar power to some of the islands in the Pacific. The multiple island nation of Vanuatu is in the process of attempting to go 100% solar. That is the wish of many of the locals there. The island of Santo, which is one of the 83 islands making up the nation of Vanuatu, uses solar power for its schools. The Hog Harbor School was the one they were featuring. The remote island can save a lot of money if they continue to upgrade their solar power systems rather than attempt to switch to a fuel generator. They intend on continuing solar expansion. It is perfect for their remote location, and thus far has been a success for them. The challenge now is receiving the funds for the upgrades, which include converters for school and hospital equipment. So far, this effort by the IUCN has been very successful for the schools, providing light, but they could use some more converters and such for the hospital equipment. So it's a work in progress. This takes me to another one, still with solar and other things. The Barefoot College, I found this to be an interesting story. In 1972, Bunker Roy, an entrepreneur, of India's upper caste, founded the Barefoot College. This college in Rajasthan, India, if I'm saying that right, trains women who come from very impoverished backgrounds to be builders and engineers of solar power devices. Some of these students do not even speak the language of their teachers. Some do not read and write. Barefoot College has illuminated, that is, they have provided solar power to 350 villages in India, a few dozen in Africa, and even some villages in Afghanistan. Bunker Roy, in my opinion, had a beautiful vision to provide food, water, and light to some of the poorest people on the planet, as well as provide education for people that some people say cannot be educated. So they return to their homes with skills and are able to make money as well. One local architect who designed Barefoot College's green campus, quote, green campus, unquote, could not read or write. Barefoot College sees the potential in all of the world's people. And to me, he does a great job at following through. And Kevin may be interested in the fact that Bunker Roy, the man who founded Barefoot College, thought of water divination as a genuine scientific skill and does some mentioning of it in some of his lectures. If those of you that don't know, I believe it was Kevin's grandfather was a water diviner.
Yes, he used divining rods,
mm-hmm.
and he used a stick from a tree in the shape of a Y, basically, to find well water.
Yes, it's a very ancient divination, really.
I wonder how they discovered it. Like, who held
Walk
the
around.
First stick?
Yeah, who walked around with that first stick? And now on to wind. In Denmark, one-fifth of the country's power is generated by wind. Denmark does not suffer from the pollution, smog, and other problems suffered by so many other countries in the industrialized world. It is as well home to the largest wind turbine manufacturing company, Vestas. In the United States of America, we have wind farms in a majority of our states. The program is sort of growing in the U.S. It's sort of an untold story. And there is even talk of a project, backed in part by Google, no less, to build an undersea transmission line off of the mid-Atlantic coast that could bring in energy from offshore wind farms. So it's the Mid-Atlantic Offshore Wind Farm Project. So much, you know, wind out there. And you don't see them as much. You know, some of the complaints about wind farms is that they're noisy, and you see this giant windmill near your property. But these will be offshore. This could provide power to 1.9 million residents. It appears now, as of February 3rd, 2012, that the current administration does want this to happen and wishes to speed up the leasing process to make the Mid-Atlantic offshore wind farm a reality. So it seems like this thing's going forward. Another offshore wind farm, which received recent permit approval, is Cape Wind in Massachusetts. Wind is an energy source that should be looked into, I think. It's worth public and private money investing in this energy. One thing that caught my interest is there is a low wind, low breeze wind turbine now by the Wicknell company, meaning it can be almost no wind at all, and it has multiple propellers, and as these multiple propellers move, they turn some gears, which turn something else faster. You know how that works with momentum, and like more comes out than goes in, which is we'll be discussing a little bit of that later. But go ahead, Jesse.
A physics thing. I was just going to say that they could install them here on Capitol Hill. There's plenty of wind there.
Oh. Or here in the studios at Cafe Fairfax.
Yes.
Okay, this turbine, the Wicknell Energy Corporation turbine, operates off of extremely low air current. You do not have to have heavy winds for this one to spin. Low winds activate the multiple propellers, set off a gear system, and generate more energy, as I mentioned. In 2009, there was a project underway to install these low wind turbines in certain areas of India. And so we'll see how that project turns out. Biomass is the next one I will mention. Biomass is the extraction of materials from living or recently living organisms. It can be used directly or be converted into biofuel. Biomass can be burned to produce energy. This would include materials such as dead trees, tree stumps, yard clippings, wood chips, even municipal waste. The other school of thought for biomass is the extraction of plant matter for the use of converting the matter into a biofuel. Recently, scientists have been looking to non-food plants, or ones we do not normally think of as food. Before, this was an issue. Places running out of corn because it was being raised for biofuel. Now they're looking to non-food sources. One of these is tobacco, olive pits, corn cobs, pecan shells, and other things that most of us may throw away. The next one I'd like to briefly discuss is geothermal. Geothermal works like this. It operates off of the Earth's natural heat. Underground water resources are heated by magma. To tap into this energy, production wells are dug 10,000 feet below the Earth's surface. The hot water travels up through the wells under its own pressure. So under its own natural pressure, this hot underground water rises up through the well. As the hot fluid reaches the surface level, some of it turns into steam. The water is then converted into high-pressure steam. Remaining liquid is sent to become standard pressure steam. Any still remaining liquid or remaining steam is sent to a converter and is considered low pressure steam. So you have high pressure, standard pressure, and low pressure. All of the steam is sent to a turbine that is spun by the pressure of the steam. The spinning turbine is then connected to an electrical generator. The spinning shaft connected to the electrical generator creates an electrical charge. This electrical charge is then directed to a transformer. In the transformer, voltage is increased. And that's what is so amazing about all of this. Everything we're talking about here in the energy world, especially as far as when you're talking about power plants, providing to cities, towns, countries, kind of comes down to we need to generate a charge and get it to a transformer and then increase its voltage and then send it out to the world. A transformer, me being an electrician, I thought I would explain this briefly. A transformer works like this. I'll start with two definitions. Electromagnetism. Electromagnetism is making magnetism with an electrical current. Electromagnetic induction, creating electrical current using magnetism. They're pretty much the opposite, the yin and yang of each other. One is making energy out of a magnet. One is taking magnetism, making energy out of it, and vice versa. Basic transformers work like this. You have two wire coils, the input or primary or the output or secondary, linked by a core of iron. The primary coil generates the magnetic field. secondary converts the magnetic field into energy, electrical current flow. When the electrical current travels through a wire, it creates a magnetic field. So in short, adding more wires increases magnetic field. Or, instead of adding more wires, you can coil a single wire at a single point many times. You can create this multi-wire effect by just coiling up. If you've ever opened up a device in your house and you see these coiled up wires, that is to generate...
Like the back of an old TV.
Exactly. Microwaves, old microwaves. It'll be wrapped around an iron core, giving off a low current. The magnetic field travels through the iron, and then it's attached to a secondary coil as well. The secondary coil has more turns in its coil if you're trying to increase. When you have twice as many turns in the secondary coil, then the voltage coming out of the transformer is increased. And in this case, as I mentioned, it is doubled because twice as many coils. So that is how you can send a little bit of voltage into a transformer and get much more out of it on the other side. It is about magnetic field generation and conversion based on electron movement and the number of or relationship of turns in a coil, primary to secondary. And this is part of the big energy question. How do we get the field generated in a way that is safe to ourselves and to nature? So any thoughts on energy generation?
I was thinking about what you're talking about, adding the coils to or adding wires and subtracting wires to create or add power and remove power, because I think that if you have less coils than the original coil, that it would take the power from the original point that was being introduced and taking it down some voltage. You know, like what you have, a power line that's on your street is way more powerful than what's in your house.
You have
a step down transformer. But I was thinking about how we have iron in our bodies, and the iron primarily circulates in our bloodstream. And people who are heavier tend to have more blood vessels because of the fat and the extra weight that they carry. And I'm in the mind that it might also give them more energy. Like they might have a more magnetic, you know, either retarding or attracting thing or whatever. We're basically batteries. The matrix refers to us as the copper top. See what I'm saying?
Right. So you're saying that people that are a bit heavier maybe have more iron and maybe are generating a slightly larger magnetic presence or electromagnetic presence.
Yes, they may not be able to take advantage of the iron that's in their bloodstream because the heart is only able to process so much at a time. But that blood that's out there and circulating, I think, is creating a greater impact on the person's environment than, let's say, a slender or frail person who hardly has any kind of meat, muscle, or tissue that can help generate that as well. So I would say that the heavier people are likely to be more sensitive because of the amount of mass that they have, and that makes them more aware of their surroundings, basically.
Hmm.
Just a thought.
And I see it's also mentioned some people in the UFO, the extraterrestrial world, mention a thing called element 115.
Yeah.
And its relationship to extraterrestrial aircraft as an energy source to power the craft. Now, is that an element or is that fuel? Or
the science community works with it, also known as element 115, but also known as unimpentium, which is an element that they talk about combining with other elements, and that gets into, you know, like college-level chemistry or whatever. But the UFO community, through the abductees and the people who are sort of like taken into UFO spacecraft, that kind of stuff, are somehow educated about some of the products and capabilities that the aircraft or the spacecraft has. And that element is 115, and basically it's an element that drives everything to the point to where there's no moving parts that are required within the spacecraft itself. It's all relative on the individual and where they want to go and what they're thinking about, what they want to see. Like, the element 115 works with the consciousness of the driver or the pilot to get them from point A to point B.
Okay.
And what I was thinking is, how can we find our element 115 in our lives? Like, what can we use to help us achieve a success or a result instead of using the old school fuels?
Now, another thing to note is that element 115 is a man-made element, or it is a created element by scientific means, and it does dissipate rapidly. So the biggest thing is when it's being talked about in like terms of like distance and spaceship travel, it requires a generator for us to make it over and over and over and over and over and over, and that's what's going to give us the pulse or the lift or thrust in, you know, the scientific terms for those. And that's why it's used pretty much as a backdrop. It actually is on the periodic table element. It's just not a naturally occurring one.
So you're saying it could be, at this point, it's real and it exists, but it's relatively unstable and needs to be regenerated, sort of what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay.
It lasts for about, 20 seconds.
Oh.
That's why it needs to be recreated so quick.
And I honestly, until I just recently started looking into, I used to pay attention to sort of everything UFO, and I've kind of drifted away from it and taken a slightly more spiritual direction, I guess, even though that could be considered a spiritual direction. But that's when I stumbled across this, and I was like, is this a real element? But apparently people are saying it is, and you're just sort of saying it's...
Based on what you've read.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
As far as I know. And speaking of when we were talking about electrical circuits, and thinking of the human in the same way, spiritual science, we are, as human beings, not just in spiritual talk, but in science talk as well. I think they both don't necessarily have to be separate. But in scientific talk as well, are electrical beings. We have a circuitry that is a send and a return and a ground. We send things out. We have a voltage and an amperage. And if things aren't just right, we could sort of very easily be electrocuted and have large amounts of electricity going through us. We are naturally, to a degree, grounded from the natural electricity that goes around. In the spiritual talk, they talk about, of course, grounding and releasing and not having energy built up. But it is true that we're made up in part of electricity. Just like if you're in an ambulance, they're going to give you that little shock and try to get volts back into you. And those little pads, I forget what they're called, but they're going to shock you back into waking up into this world. And then we go back to our, you know, near-death experiences and all that sort of thing. But we are, in part, electrical beings, and I consider that to be scientific proof of the soul. It's just all part of it. I think they're all connected and not disconnected. They're just all part.
Another thing you can do with your body, it'll use your own natural body energy as well as friction. Rub your hands really, really fast together for 30 seconds. Pull them slightly apart, put them back together. You will feel that energy tingle.
Oh, yeah.
And it's created by a combination of your own energy and a combination of friction.
Yep.
I mean, there is no, I think there really is no separation between science and spirituality. Just, you know, we're catching up with each other over and over and over again.
Yes.
Is what it really is. We might take a few steps forward, then a few steps back, and it's a game of cat and mouse that will
probably
go on indefinitely.
And I do myself, I do those little exercises all the time of when you put your hands together and feel the chi energy build up between one and the next. And I think it's very real. And again, I add sound to everything. Every visualization I do, I add sound. And to me, sound is energy. The Hindus talked about the original note in the Aum, and we discussed that a little bit last week. And I would like to pause briefly here to welcome who I see in the chat room now. Everyone, Marcy, Veronica, and guest 956. Welcome, everybody, for joining us today and for your support. It's always good to see everyone. I'm trying to stare at the chat room a little more often. We're trying to get another computer in here. And if anybody has any questions or would like a reading from Kevin Baird, you can call in at 760-542-4345. We were discussing alternative energy and as well as how energy relates to us as human beings and the science of the soul.
Sorry. No, I coughed.
Oh, no, but all right. It happens. So today, by the way, we'll take a brief vacation from what we were talking about because this, I think, has to be mentioned. Today is a leap year day. So our show has fallen on some pretty interesting days. I think did we fall right on Imbolc or the day after?
Yeah, right around there.
We've fallen right on the leap year day. And also, this is the anniversary day in the year 1692. Abigail Williams and Ann Putnam, two young girls from Salem, Massachusetts, accused three women of witchcraft. These three women were Sarah Good, Sarah Osborne, and a West African slave named Tishua. These three women were arrested, and the Salem witch trials had begun. So this was the day she pointed the finger. When the trials were finally brought to a close, 200 men and women had been arrested and jailed. 19 had been hung at Gallows Hill, and one man had been pressed to death. And for those of you familiar with the Karelian nativist tradition that I'm a member of, their temple in Salem is called Tituba Temple, after the West African slave. But it's like their student temple there that they do their videos at. So, a little bit of history right there for Salem, Massachusetts, the anniversary of the day.
And the movie The Crucible talks about that story as well. If you're not in the mood for reading the whole story, you can just sit down with a glass of tea or something and watch the movie.
I don't know if I ever saw that one. I've seen other ones of related topics about. I just don't know if I saw that one. Do you remember who was in that?
I can't recall the name. I'm sure Brett can help us with that. Brett?
I'm looking.
Oh, he's
I'm
looking.
Doing
okay.
The IMDb
thing. Okay. He's eye in the sky. Anyway.
Though, I guess, while we're there, we're talking about leap year. I guess I think that's kind of a perfect segue into my segment because I did want to talk a little bit about leap year.
Sure, let's do it. Let's do the Brett Hillman's Eye in the Sky report.
Leap year in astrology. I've seen this question pop up many times. What does leap year have any lasting consequences as far as astrology goes? And the answer to that is no. The dates for the sun signs and various other planets are calculated to assume that leap year is involved every 4 years. And the cusp dates, you may notice that they sometimes move up and down 1 year. That's actually one of the reasons that it continually moves. For example, Daniel, you and I will shift depending on what year and what day, if we're Aquarius or Capricorn, because of that. And we are the quintessential moat of a cusp because we are born on January 20th, which is the actual switching date.
Mm.
So that is actually one of the reasons why it'll switch every couple of years. And you'll see some notes that say January 21st is the first day of Aquarius. It's really not. But it's our the astrological signs are based around the movement of the Earth and the its view with the planets over 2,000 years ago. But the sign meanings have not changed. So if you hear in the newspaper a lot of times, they were saying last year that a new sign was put in and all the dates have now been changed. That really has nothing to do with at least regular Western astrology. There are some people that actually do take in the movement of the planets, but they really don't change that much when it comes to their understanding or how the energy affects us. So don't worry if you were born on a leap year and you only have an actual birthday every 4 years. You are still a Pisces. And now we go to our normal report. The moon is currently in Gemini, so the moon tends to deal with our thoughts and emotions, and of course, Gemini is an air sign, so it tends to be intellectual, but that twin aspect makes you go kind of scatterbrained. So make sure your notes are a little extra clear today or in the next couple of days. And it will be moving into Cancer on Friday. And at that point, your mind is going to go, it's going to want to be safe. Cancer tends to go with, I want to be safe and secure, and I want things to go well. That's kind of its thing. Mercury on Friday will also be moving. And it will complete its journey around the zodiac and will begin its spot back in Aries. Mercury, again, communication and pretty much anything relating to our gathering of information. Watch your mouth. You might tend to say things before thinking quite a bit. That's something to kind of watch out for over the next month. Any questions?
All right. Now, I was interested in, you mentioned the changing of the astrological signs, because it's a question that does come up when you talk about astrology. People go, oh, it's all been rearranged now, like rolling the dice and it's all different. And you were sort of clarifying that it's not really the case.
Here's the thing, but if you actually look at where the sun, how originally when everything was brought up and scientized as we do it now, was about 2,000 years ago.
Yes.
And where the sun came up through the sky, it would go through an astrological symbol, and that was the astrological symbol that we have now. For example, right now the sun would be going through Pisces. Now it's about two signs further. The thing is, we still are affected by the same energies at that time.
Right.
It's just when the actual system was put in place was when the sun went through Pisces. There is actual multiple kinds of astrology. Another kind is called sidereal astrology.
Yes.
And that actually does take into account a lot of the changes. You know, actually, we use sidereal astrology. There's tropical astrology. Other way around. We use tropical. Sidereal actually does take into account these changes. But if you actually look really deeply into it, it's not that much different. It's just they kind of use the more correct terms for things. They're also going to be talking about different effects that the planets have on us. So having kind of a knowledge in the multiple forms of astrology can be really useful.
Yeah.
But if you're just learning, like myself, I tend to stick with just one for now. And as I'm picking up various things, my talks will continue to get more in-depth, especially when I figure out what those little lines mean on an astrology chart. But that's a work in progress.
As we all always are, anyway. And so very good. So you're basically saying it's the moon, Gemini, so some emotions, but a little more intellectual, but maybe a little scatterbrained with the the double, the twin Gemini thing. So be on guard for what things you might say in emotion.
If you know me, you will know this is probably doubly true, considering the fact that I am a Gemini moon. I am a Gemini moon that is going from gibbous and going into full. It's actually right there. It's actually on a cusp of those changes. So if you know me, I'm scatterbrained a lot of the time. I will lose the – if I, my head wasn't screwed on, I'd lose it. I tend to give the important thing things to someone else to take care of. For example, parking tickets. For like a parking ride, they give you a little ticket. I tend to hand that to someone else because I will lose those.
Right.
And I don't want to be paying the extra fines. Next week, I'm going to be talking about Venus because it will be moving into Taurus. So we'll have some interesting things with that.
Ah. All right, then. And that was Brett Hillman, our Sky Watcher, with his Eye in the Sky. And I would like to now go briefly to our poetry place. And then from there, we'll go to Kevin Baird to talk a little bit about our card, which does relate to our topic as well. This was from the Carillion Herald last week, called The Snapped Thread by Robert Graves. Desired first by a natural miracle, united bodies, united hearts, blazed beauty. Transcended bodies, transcended hearts. Two souls, now unalterably one, in whole love always and forever, soar out of the twilight, up through the air, let fall their sensuous burden. Is it kind, though, is it honest even, to consort with none but spirits, leaving true wedded hearts like ours, in enforced night-long separation, each to its random bodily inclination, the thread of the miracle snapped. And that was The Snapped Thread by Robert Graves, the Order of Bards, I believe is the name of that little poetry group. Or you can always remember, you can just send me a poem to be read on the air, and it will be published in the Carillion Herald as well. And now on to Kevin Baird, psychic medium intuitive consultant, who can be reached at www.templeofgaia.com. or at the Stones Crystallis in Herndon, or Sticks and Stones in Fairfax, to talk about his Horizon Oracle card of the day, the divination deck that he created.
And Kevin, you drew the empty card?
The empty card. I'm the one that draws the cards, by the way. I usually draw it, and then I tell Kevin which card is going to be the card of the week, and I do it randomly. I don't try to pick a card that matches a topic. It usually works out that way for us. So what we're going to do is do continuous reading with a card, one or two each week, and then we might go back, gather them, remember them, and do sort of like a month-long recap and say, oh, what is this month's reading for the show?
And last week was the help card, I believe, was the last one. It showed an angel that was, or a person that was causing a feather to hover.
I believe that was one of the two. So it connects, yes. So, and this week it is?
Empty. You drew the card empty, and it's associated with the time 4:41, whether it's a.m. or p.m. And when if you look at the picture on the rotating marquee, it shows an individual with no background whatsoever, and that they're just holding a vessel, a cup, a can, or something in it, and showing the depletion of the last possible drop that's coming from this can. That really is a message that whatever it is that we were using is now gone. And that's very relative to today's show, which is about our fuel reserves, the old school fuel, going away. And that we now need to look to your windmills and your hydrodynamics and your geothermal energies. The thing is those things are not really transportable. We can't put it into a little can, like with the individual that's in the empty card, and take it with us when we want to use it. The closest thing, which is what we were talking about before, which is element 115, to where it can be roughly the size of a 20-ounce Pepsi bottle that can generate enough energy, based on the research that I've done, with the people that are out there to drive most of the high-end extraterrestrial aircraft. So it is possible that a vast amount of energy can be contained in a little bit of space, but we have to get past the next evolution of our energy, which is the windmills and the geothermals and the hydrodynamics and even the solar. Yeah.
Which they do have a solar car now.
Yeah.
They're starting to come up with really small, thin solar devices. So I view it as out with the old, in with the new. We can't keep drawing from the same empty well. As well as if we personalize this car to make that about your personal life.
Yes. It can be one about relationships, to where there is someone who, let's say, was doing research for you and that there's nothing else that they can do, then you really have to part ways.
Mm-hmm.
That there's nothing else that they can help you on that project. That project has ended. Now what do you do? What do they do? So it's also a message about that. It can also be in relationships as well. If you're in a relationship that is a very sort of draining and needy kind of relationship, and that you just feel like you're the butler in the relationship and not really anything else, then that talks about an exhaustion as well. Like you're down to the last drop of me or of you or of them, and that maybe it's now time to move on as well. There are people who are in relationships that last for 10 to 15 years, like marriages, and then they end up in divorce. Well, instead of them staying locked into that empty can mode, they've now transitioned into where they're like, okay, I'm going to say goodbye, and that this is what we're going to do as a part of saying goodbye. And then beginning a new can and a new way to accumulate the energies that are life-sustaining. So as a part of our evolution, part of that evolution is saying goodbye to old-school relationship structures and also energy methods as well. So the empty card really talks about what's spent in your life and can you be done with it.
Yeah.
What do you get, Brett, on that?
I'm looking at the card at the moment and I'm trying to get little glimpses of it as it goes through the marquee pictures.
Yeah.
And I'm getting, there's that whole glass half full, glass half empty thing. Taken to its extreme that it's completely empty. And there's nothing on the card beyond the person, and I'm getting more, it's an empty vessel. Anything can be put into it.
Yes. I was going to say something to that.
Yeah, it's the fact that anything can be put into it. It's just a new start. It's a time to begin again. And anything can be put in that. So, do you want to put something that's, beneficial and helpful, or do you want to fill it with things that are going to hold you down or things that will outright just be useless to you? It's a time of expanse.
Yeah, and I got a similar thing, too. And I think Kevin did mention that as well, saying, it's time for something new. Fill this thing with something new. And then, of course, 4 plus 4 is 441 is 8. 8 plus 1 is 9. You fill it with something new, you're on your way to your new wishes and your new completion.
Exactly. And I did tie the timings that are associated with the cards to numerology, the general numerology that's out there, as well as my own definitions as well.
With the time issues, with the time things.
Correct.
This is time for this and that. Okay. And that's interesting. And definitely a place I've been in recently. As I've been starting things new, I've been starting a new diet, no way else to say it, I've been partying less, and
right.
I've been eating mostly raw fruits and vegetables, and been working out, and I'm going to keep upstepping that as well, as far as getting to the gym more. And so I feel great. My energy levels feel incredible from eating a lot of. I still eat fish, so I'm not a vegetarian, but I eat mostly raw fruits and vegetables now and have for the last few weeks, I guess. And
I want to caution you, a lot of diets do that whole vegetarian thing. Really be careful of that. There are reasons that you need meat protein as opposed to other types of protein. Like you said, you're doing the fish, which is good. Don't be afraid to take, if you go somewhere and they offer you something, don't be afraid to eat it, you know. It's that kind of thing. Don't take it to extreme.
I say when I'm saying it's about 80% raw. So what I mean is about most of what is making up the large quantity of what I'm eating is raw fruits and vegetables. But like I said, I'm still eating fish, and like I said, I still treat myself to something else cooked. So it's not, I'm not on 100% strict regimen to feel smug and go, I'm doing this. You know, I'm just saying I feel a lot better when I eat this way. Like, for instance, Kevin, he went to a nutritionist that told him that he kind of requires a lot of meat and that sort of protein.
Yep, I tried to be a vegetarian and couldn't. I tried it for like 2 years, and it just making me sick.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. My diet tends to be just, doing a lot of little things here and there.
Brett, have you experimented with vegan lifestyle yet?
I used to be an Adventist. That didn't work. I tried the vegetarian and vegan thing. Nuh-uh. Not doing it again. But
what made you quit?
Yeah. Bacon.
Bacon. No, it's always pork.
In all seriousness, no. A lot of it was just because of the fact that I was hearing, you should be feeling, I wasn't getting any of those, feelings. I was actually feeling a lot worse a lot of the time. Mm. And now I still go back and I love veggie burgers. I don't see them as a substitute, but I love them. I'll go out and get a good Boca burger about once every couple months.
I like, there's one in the store called a masala burger. I've always liked, if I'm going to have a veggie burger, I don't like the ones that try to imitate meat. I just like a great vegetable patty that's all spiced up, and maybe it's real spicy. Like one kind of like had a Middle Eastern flair to it that I really liked, and one was like a black bean Spanish kind of a thing. I like lots of flavor. I like hot sauce, and I like spicy and vinegary.
So your primary food group, or the primary thing that you eat, is your regular energy source. And the title of the show is, what is your alternative energy? So your Boca burger might be...
your alternative.
Yeah,
the occasional change here and there. Maybe do a day where I do a complete vegetarian day.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of little things.
With caffeine as an energy source, and other people use ginseng as an energy source with a little bit of cayenne, red pepper. It's another type.
I mainly use caffeine. A couple of times I'll grab one of those little energy shots. I like those. Those tend to work pretty well for me. I don't do it all the time. Another big thing with, we're talking about diets a little bit here.
Mm.
A big thing I did was when I started doing, if I'm eating something, I am having what is one serving. Not especially if it's like treats or something, when they say it's like two cookies is one serving. Of course, my brain is thinking, who eats two cookies? But I've gotten to the point where that's what I do. I don't eat any more than what, like, the exact number of what a serving is. And that's a big,
Two slices.
Those little steps.
Same for pizza too. Two slices, then you're done too, I guess.
Yeah, I'm still working on pizza.
Now, Brett.
I like pizza too much.
Oh yeah, I love a well-made pizza. And you probably get well-made pizzas living up north. When I went down south to Pensacola, forget about it. You could not find a good pizza. Now, you start going up north where, New York and New England, even Baltimore, where I'm from, great pizza places.
It has to do with the water.
I guess. I don't know what it is, but I could not find a good pizza to save my life down south.
New York and Chicago-style pizza, both good for different reasons.
I like the thin ones. I prefer the thin ones. I like the thin crust. But that kind of New York-style.
Mm-hmm.
But, Brett, you had mentioned, since we were talking a little bit about diet and energy and stuff, you said to me one time, I think you, have been progressively losing weight.
Yeah, this year I've lost 80 pounds.
80. Wow, that's a pretty good amount of weight to lose. That's like a small person you lost.
Yeah. So,
were you doing it with a diet regimen or working out?
A lot of it was the fact that I got a good job that wasn't stressing me out, and I was getting a lot more walking from it. But
wow.
Yeah, like I said, it was the little things. I was drinking a lot more water. At the convention this week, my roommates and I together, we finished 2/3 of a case of water in 3 days. And that was because we were doing a lot of energy work, you know.
Yeah.
But then drink, cut the soda was a big part of it. If I do drink it, it's only diet now.
There are people that – we'll actually do a show on – I know a personal trainer, and I thought – or at least a half a show of just talking to a personal trainer – and just talking about physicality. And the guy, see, he's also into meditation and stuff and how it also helps your meditation and magical practice. So I might bring him on for, like, even if it's not a whole show, maybe like a half-hour segment or something like that. And he's really smart. He does Qigong and he does Kung Fu, and he's also a personal trainer and, you know, in the gym and everything else. A very bright guy. And I'm going to be bringing him on sometime in the near future. And I'd like to bring up my plugs again real quick. Mr. Kevin Baird, psychic medium, intuitive consultant.
Thank you.
www.templeofgaia.com or in person at the stores Crystalis in Herndon and Sticks and Stones in Fairfax. I would as well like to plug someone's store who's going to be a guest in the next episode of Main Street Universe, March 7th. Esoterica. Esoterica online, www.esotericanova.com. Or you can call them at 703-777-4642. Still with your New Age interfaith focus, herbs, crystals, stones, oils, candles, incense, divination, tools, and more. That's www.esotericanova.com. And Lily will be joining us next week. Is she going to attempt to show up in person? Or
no, she's
going
to call in over the phone.
Okay.
She's maintaining her store, store face online, and she's been very busy lately with everything. So the trend has moved from basically the main street from her to the online main street, so to speak.
We'll ask her next week. I guess I'll get into those questions
Yeah.
next week. I would like to also mention I did this week have a nice, speaking of diet and food, I had a nice lunch and pagan meetup meeting with the U-Wings. They are two legally recognized clergy from Circle Sanctuary, from the Selena Fox's Circle Sanctuary group. So I'd like to say hi to them if they happen to listen or listen in the archives. We had a pretty nice long conversation over lunch this past Sunday. They run the local Northern Virginia's pagan meetup group here. And I had gathered with them for a while before I even knew they were affiliated with Circle Sanctuary. Found that out, I think, the last time or two I went there. So very, very, very knowledgeable couple. They're a married couple. And they do a lot. They do a lot of stuff locally here for the pagan community. And so anyway, back to our topic we were discussing. Energy.
What is your alternative energy?
Alternative energy, both personal and as well as, I would like to mention, you know, Nikola Tesla. People claim that he ran a car that they said ran on, quote, ambient energy. That was it. Not solar, just it was called an ambient energy car. I actually met a guy that claimed to watch it. I'm not going to say any names. But he claimed to have witnessed this car years and years ago. This guy was very old, and he claimed to have actually witnessed this car at work. And, Kevin?
Yeah, I've read a little bit about that and been in a couple of classes where the professors were talking about how he used a sort of like an atmospheric energy producer that anything that was neon or was like neon-based would become illuminated. So you could have this energy generator sitting in a corner of the room, and then you could have neon bulbs and lamps and everything at different locations not plugged in, and they would become illuminated.
It would just somehow that wave or signal would hit them.
Yes.
And light it up, as you know, kind of like fluorescent bulbs or what they're like, a powder that lights up. So something in that neon structure would just light up.
It goes back to your electromotive field that you were talking about, EMF, and that it creates a magnetic field that only influences those types of, I guess, elements.
And it brings me up to another case when you talked about sort of a cumulative atmospheric energy. One that I was going to do an episode on, we just kind of got into other things,
right,
was Wilhelm Reich and the Orgone Energy Accumulator, which was basically a weather machine to make it rain. And I thought it was a fascinating story. I haven't quite got around to doing an episode, but it does fit here. And he had successful tests in Maine, where farmers in Maine said, come and we need rain. So he went and brought his Orgone Accumulator machine out there. He, according to the stories, he made it rain. Later on, for some permit violations and some other little sort of pesky little bureaucratic laws, the FBI and the federal government came and just destroyed everything, just got rid of all. But you have to remember the time frame. This was during the atomic scare, right? This was the atomic scare era.
So they turned all of his machines basically into harps. Which is another play on words, basically.
Who knows if they took, just said, you know, confiscated his stuff, destroyed it, whatever happened to it. Most of the traces of it were gone. He had students, though, so some people were out there keeping some of this alive. But his physical stuff, a lot of it was
sort of like
destroyed.
Gardner.
So it turned out to be a sad story. You know, I remember just looking it up, going, oh, let's look up the guy that claimed to make it rain, and it turned out to be this sad, sort of corrupt story of a very dedicated guy who, by the way, got all private funding, if I remember correctly. So he wasn't even getting the
Illuminati,
money.
Probably.
Yeah. Possibly.
Illuminators, light, energy.
And he operated out of a university with basically private funding, and... But they didn't like him. You're not going to change the weather without telling us how you did it. So they kind of took all of his stuff. But that was Wilhelm Reich. I encourage anybody to look up that story. Kate Bush in the 80s wrote a song about it.
How do you spell the last name on that guy?
Reich. I think it's a R-E-I-C-H.
The German?
Yeah, like it's a German Wilhelm. Okay. You know. And if you remember in the 80s, Kate Bush wrote a song about it. Donald Sutherland was in the video playing the scientist. And it was just, for those of you that are... 40 or
we need more movies like that, I think.
Older. Yeah, movies about great stories like that. It's just
they
like,
would all be on YouTube, though.
Anyway. Back to our topic on energy. The solar car I discussed is actually for sale, and I think it's about $100,000. I would love to have something like that, even experimental, just to know that I didn't have to
go. Well, remember the first watches, the LED watches, were like $1,000.
Yeah.
But now you can get them free.
Really. Yeah. People like give those things away now. Or calculators. Yeah. Remember how expensive, I mean, as a kid in the 70s, I remember expensive calculators. You got one in your cell phone now that you paid, it's one feature in a device. My cell phone cost me $20.
It's an app. But yeah,
it
used to be of a status that you were able to carry your calculator on your belt.
Or have a case for it, a little hand case.
Yeah. Then the slide rule in the pocket, and then the glasses on, or a tape on the glasses on your nose bridge.
That's right. But it's so these things, they come down in price. And like I said, the solar power has come down. The solar panels, they used to always make them out of, you know, aluminum and silicon and all these more expensive materials, but now they've gotten it to this paper-thin material to where it's 50% cheaper than it just was about 10 years ago. So it has come, you know, if you keep up with these things, you see their slow progression, and now the big companies, I think, are starting to jump on board and see that there's a market, which was basically what had to happen. I have a friend personally, and I would love to get him on the show, and I don't want to say his name until I can get him because I can't find his number, and he invented a car engine that runs off of compressed air. And this is somebody I know in real life that I've known for a long time. He doesn't have any more grant money or anything to keep going. He did get a sort of a golf cart-sized vehicle to go about 35 miles an hour. He got the idea from a compressed air from, he was a carpenter, and with the nail gun. And it was a great idea. He even had a valve for it that when one tank was emptying, it filled up another tank.
I bet it was loud.
It might have had some noise to it. I never actually witnessed it. Now, if you went over his house, you couldn't get away from it. He would show you the plans, and he had a workshop, and they were all over the walls, and he had this big, thick book that he'd pull out, and he would,
wow,
in very long form, explain the whole entire thing to you. And he was a great guy. I'd love to get in contact with him again, and I'm going to make an attempt to, because it was a very interesting invention. I'm curious if he's gotten any further with it. He's worked on it for years, a car that runs off of compressed air. And I love the idea that when one tank emptied, it was filling up another tank. It was a special valve he invented to make that happen. Now, eventually, as you might think, even with the special valve, of course, there's going to be air leakage, and eventually you just got to get two new tanks or two refilled tanks.
You got condensate issues with that also.
Sure. There's also always something, you know, when you start working with things. There's always something that comes up.
But we're in an age right now to where we, if we can, come up with our own versions of alternative energy, like the Bill Gateses back in the 80s, I guess, or 70s.
Right.
In the garages, coming up with the new ideas. Because now, you know, the old school ways are worn out, like the can on the empty card, and it's time now to find something new, like Brett said, to fill it back up again.
Yeah.
Or to go get a new six-pack.
Why not get a whole six-pack?
Yeah.
I've said that many times, actually.
How good for 2012 in the age of Aquarius? New ideas. What do you know?
Yeah.
One would think that this thing runs on a clock.
And the other thing with Pluto in the Capricorn, it's exposing a lot of the dirty laundry that's been out there for the longest time, and everybody's having to get cleaned. And it's primarily significant, like, offices, like whether it's the, you know, like somebody on Wall Street or the banks or some corporation or whatever, and even parts of the government. Those big names are getting in trouble, and it's all based on the energy from what I get and my other people that are around me of Pluto moving into Capricorn.
Yes, and that's going to be there for another 11 years. So it could be an interesting time business-wise. It's already been there for about 3 years now, and, you know, it goes so slow that its actual, like, cusp phase is actually a couple of years long, you know. So something to keep in mind when we get into 2023. Because we'll be moving into a Pluto Aquarius phase, which will mean it'll be a business of ideas. You know, will be kind of the overarching theme.
Yes.
If Pluto remains on its present course as it has been and what it affects.
Because Aquarius is about ideas, new thoughts, creation, creativity. Air signs, those are the strengths of air signs. I mean, me being an air sign, the weaknesses of air signs are unproductivity, dizziness, dreaminess beyond reality, those kind of things.
You're also going to be detached.
Yes, a detachment. And kind of sometimes just not, like I think at one point I just woke up and went, oops, I forgot to live my destiny, you know, just because I was just so out of reality for so long and out of my own, you know, sort of following my dreams for so long that I just felt like a detached human being for many years. And that's definitely one of the weaknesses of the air sign. But a good, strong point of air signs is they can make great detached, like floating above petty things, kind of a leader, like making a good decision without being in the fire or in the earth of it or in the the emotional swamp. You know, they can sort of make that. That's when they're being strong, and that's when they're being the positive qualities of air signs.
Good logistical support.
While at the same time being able to relate to those emotions, just not being caught up in them.
I think that's where you and I work really well, because I'm a fire sign Aries.
Yeah.
And you as the Aquarius.
And you're definitely a person of action that's always focused. You're always, like, every time I see Kevin, he's always working on what he is, what he's doing, his company, his thing, his deck, whatever new products or whatever new, he's also a bit of an artist, whatever thing he's working on,
yeah.
he's about 100%, and he's always doing it, and he's always focused. And it's great to have...
So, Kevin, we must drive you nuts, because you're dealing with two Aquariuses.
Yes.
With our trust of Capricorn, we tend to be a little grounded with our loss of, you know, with our flightiness, which is kind of interesting. Because when you're at a cusp, you actually have very vastly different signs working together.
Yeah, we're earth and air being on the cusp. But I definitely fall more into the Aquarius. But I have the come back to earth thing as well. It's just, I have to...
Your come back to earth moments are hard and harsh.
Yeah. Yeah, they pretty much are. It's kind of like a learning the hard way kind of thing to come out of the sky every once in a while. But right now, it looks like we have about 12 minutes remaining. Remember that if anybody wishes to call, they can call at 760-542-4345. We're talking about alternative energy as well as how it applies to personal life and spiritual life. Or you can just call in and get a quick reading from Kevin Baird, from his Horizon Oracle. And back to... Talking
about projects.
Yeah.
And the artwork thing, I was working on this thing that's known as Paranormal Windows. And
yes.
It's sort of like a black background with what looks like a smoke texture on the front. And everybody knows that there used to be some form of scrying through smoke or through fires. You peer into a fireplace or a bonfire or something, and that you can scry things. I've sort of like created that phenomena, but stored it into a frozen format. So depending on what your thoughts are or whatever you're thinking about at the time, we'll sort of outline in a matrixing kind of function some kind of message into the images that you can see upon the picture. My latest transition is one to where I've been working with greenery, like things that look like weeds, you know, coming from the local artisan shop. And then I fix it in such a way to where it can be sort of like mounted on walls. So it looks like something is growing out of the wall. And that's known as stone crop. But I'm turning it into a more artistic kind of thing. And I'm pushing a plug here. It's available at one of the galleries that I belong to over here in Annandale, and that they have them up for viewing. But it is something that lets you know that no matter where you are, you can thrive. Because you look, as you're going down the highways, you can see these plants that are growing outside of the walls that are supposed to be keeping the sound away from the neighborhoods or whatever.
Yeah, the sound barriers.
Yeah, that's a stone crop also. I've always seen that as being artistic instead of an eyesore. And decided to turn it into something that people can use. Like, I have one client who has taken one of those little, like, temporary hooks and mounted it on her sliding glass door, the one that doesn't move, and it looks like she has, like, some kind of green thing growing out of the glass, but she says it gives her green during the wintertime when there is no green and helps her with her mood.
Okay, which I think is always good if you provide a natural, anything that provides a natural scenery and in that environment, whether it's your little office or whatever.
Exactly.
Especially if it's one that looks sterile or something. It's always good to have the outdoors.
Like the ficus tree is really good, really year-round. It's very relaxing, peaceful to look at, relieves stress.
Yeah, I was watching a video recently, and I remember thinking, how nice it was. It was just a little ritual I saw in a video. And I just remember the overwhelming thing that hit me was how nice it was that it was outside and how great it is to do something outside. I get so used to doing stuff like in my, if I do something, doing it in my little altar room. We want to film an outside ritual sometime soon with an eclectic group of pagans that are around here. I've got a few worked out. We're just working out the schedules and what's going to be involved and what little things. As part of it, I was going to bury my crystal access stuff, but that's only going to be one small part of it. And it's going to be sort of a multifaceted thing with a few people doing different stuff. It's not like this won't necessarily be me being the star of the show. I'm just going to be one of the participants doing one little thing, kind of maybe calling one quarter and doing my little thing, and then other people will be doing their thing, and there'll be, we've got a small dance group and drums, so we're still working on everybody's schedules and deciding. We wanted it to be winter, because I like the idea of filming something, at least with everybody being somewhat comfortable, and seeing, like, the breath of people when they're talking and having fires. It looks like it might be getting...
You can wear your big cloaks, too.
Yeah.
And really feel in character.
Yeah, and just sort of really soak that in. I guess now we're shooting for Beltane, so we'll see what happens. Maybe even a summery Litha, perhaps solstice.
I have to make the bad joke. If you're recording at Beltane, please, please keep it PG.
Yeah, these are a fairly PG group. But I have a feeling it might actually be after that, just the way everybody's schedules are going. And because we're all doing different things, and you know how that goes. Everybody's doing something different. And but it will be a film student, so we're hoping to make it look really good. I mean, I'm talking multiple cameras that he's going to edit later, multiple microphones set up, hopefully, where you don't really see them, or maybe little mics on the person, or the wireless, like Britney Spears ones or something. Because we don't want it to look too much like it's performed. We want it to be natural, and it's like, but somebody just happens to be filming it. So it won't be me at a microphone going, all right, everybody. You know, we want it to look like it's just as it is in reality, just happening. And then it won't, it's not like I'm performing. This film student is the one that's going to be walking around, making sure the sound's okay. He's going to be walking around using multiple cameras and be almost out of the way. Like we were talking about having the cameras not really being, you know, too present. But then what we had was some people said, oh, they're in the broom closet, so they don't, you know, oops. Okay, so when I mentioned it being filmed, they went, oh, I didn't know you're filming it. So I had a few people back out from that. But anyway, we'll talk about that more as it evolves. Because Kevin and I are expanding, I want to tell everybody, to a Main Street Universe YouTube channel, as well as other visual and audio media channels. There's like another one or two we discussed, as well as going to local radio and possible television here in Fairfax, Virginia, local Fairfax radio station.
And that would be produced by you.
Yeah. And Kevin has the license for those things as well, for the equipment. So we are looking to expand and do some different things. The truth is, this format, Blog Talk Radio, can bring in more listeners. But it will be kind of cool just to know that you can take a little radio, and our show will be on that radio as well, you know, just, you know, an actual AM or FM radio. But this is, the podcast media is of, you know, amazing potential. You just keep marketing and keep marketing.
I like the webcast stuff because we're able to reach people like Veronica. No, it was in the room, and she's from the UK.
Yes.
And she's really been one of my listeners for years.
Oh, okay. And, yeah, sometimes, occasionally, Green Gate and a few others listen. They're from Amsterdam, I believe. I believe that's where he's from. So we get overseas folks here, too. We actually get a lot of archive listeners.
Then my friend in Australia, Fletcher, listens whenever he's up. I think he's sleeping right now. He's a night owl.
Ah, yeah.
So we have international people. I also have another guy, Guy, in Japan.
Ah, okay.
He listens from time to time also, but he speaks mostly Japanese, and then we use Google Translate to talk back and forth.
I wonder if Brett has an opinion on this, too, and it's similar to what you were talking about. Brett, Have you had any experience or talked to bilingual or multilingual people about it? Is Google Translate accurate? I always wonder that sometimes.
It does not.
honestly, I have not had the ability to ask anyone, and now that I think of it, I know quite a few people who are bilingual. Well, I should probably send a couple of pages and just, you know, have them look for me. It's like, that's a good idea. I would assume it is more so than some of the other ones are, because they have a, like, an actual around-the-world business.
Yeah. And I've been, and I mean very slowly, I've been slowly trying to teach myself Spanish. I was going quicker back when I was a construction worker. It was the dominant language of the job site, if you understand, you know, East Coast and the makeup.
Marcy, who I know to be multilingual, says that they aren't really that good. Anything that's on machine translators tends not to do that well. And I guess that kind of makes sense. I've done some translating from other sites, and now that I'm thinking about it, yeah, they kind of do... Because of the way language is structured differently, they have the words structured weird, and we just don't, you know.
It'll look funny. Like, the words might be right.
Languages,
The
Romance languages are built in some ways like ours. The Germanic, and that includes English, every single one of them is wrote in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
They are not related the way the Romance languages are.
Oh, I didn't know Marcy spoke multiple languages.
Yep. And Spanish, the Spanish that we learn in schools is, it literally can be said it's Mexican. It's not Spanish, because Spanish is Castilian.
Yeah, Castellano, they would say. Or Castilian.
And it's a very different language. So.
Yeah. Because I sometimes would go to Google Translate and I would be like, is this? Okay, it looks like, anyway.
We got 2 minutes.
Go ahead.
We got 2 minutes. 2 minute warning.
Okay, no, that's fine. I was aware of that. I wanted to say we've been talking about alternative energy today, and a few things I'd like to wind down with is solar is much thinner, much more pliable, much more easy, 400 times cheaper in one case to make, and has come down in price 50%. Windmills, or there are windmill projects being built that are going offshore that will possibly supply power to a few million folks. And, of course, let's keep looking. Of course, there's Element 115 that is real. And that
you can find that on Wikipedia.
Mm-hmm. Some people say that it's being used for extraterrestrial travel, and it is an element that actually does exist, and as Brett mentioned, but a bit unstable at this point, kind of breaks down very quickly.
It breaks down to another man-made element called Element 113. So the half-life is really quick, and then that breaks down, and then that breaks down, and then that breaks down. So
remember, mysteries and possibilities of the universe are closer to Main Street than you may have ever imagined. Thank you and bless.
Blessings.